From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. Holidays are times for the familiar, the same food, the same old ornaments, the same old stockings, and the same old family conflicts. But sometimes something new happens at Christmas. Here are five stories about five first Christmases.
My name is Michael Alviar, and my first Christmas in the United States was in Miami. I was 10 years old, and my father is Ecuadorian and my mother is American, and I spent the first 10 Christmases in Quito, Ecuador. So in Ecuador, the doorbell would ring constantly with this family or that, with this cousin's friend, that uncle's uncle. When it rang, my sisters would shriek with excitement, and my brother and I would rub our hands together because the doorbell meant only one thing, more presents. And, you know, in America, nobody rang our door. There wasn't any people. I remember thinking, in my first American Christmas, thinking, what good are all these presents if there's nobody to show them to? So it was just sort of like, just staring at, you know, your brother and sisters. How fun is that, you know? And I remember my brother turned to me and he said something like, ¿Dónde está toda la gente? Where is everyone? And I think that was the year that Feliz Navidad turned into Merry Christmas. I never experienced another Ecuadorian Christmas after that because my parents divorced. And we stayed in Miami for the rest of my childhood.
I'm Clea Simon, and my father died in January 93, so I had thought that I was done with my grieving. But when December came around, it was just me and my mom. In the past, when my father had been alive, he'd be the one who'd chill the champagne, or he'd make the little treats, the melted Gruyere on toast. Or, as my mother reminded me recently, he used to make zabaglione in this big double boiler, and it was a mess. It was a total mess. But it was sort of part of the experience was him whipping up the egg yolks and throwing in the marsala and telling, you know, awful jokes, just awful jokes. But there was a sense of boisterousness and just noise and fun. But that first Christmas after my father was gone, I don't think I or my mother had really taken consideration as to what it would be like. And so I remember showing up there, and she had some music on, and we had some snacks laid out, but the noise wasn't there, the presence wasn't there. There was nobody sort of telling these, you know, loud jokes over and over that we'd heard a million times that always made us groan. There was nobody coming out of the kitchen still with the apron on and maybe that slight smell of burned toast as something was left under the broiler too long. It was very civil. There was a lot of lulls in the conversation. It just wasn't quite the same. There was a silence there. It was like the grief was reawakened by the holidays, and there was just nothing could fill that void. There was just a quiet there, and it was a sad quiet.
My name is Jenny Spinner, and it's been 10 years now since that first Christmas when I refused to eat meat and caused something of a family scandal. I was home in Decatur, Illinois, and my entire family was gathered as usual around the long dining room table in my grandparents' house, and my dad was at one end of the table, and my grandpa Heinkel, the patriarch of the family, was at the other end. And I was sitting next to him, as I usually did. I adored him and took every opportunity when I was home visiting to be near him. And somebody passed me the ham, and I thought I could just sort of slide into the fact that I wasn't eating meat anymore. but he caught me passing on the plate and asked me what was going on. It wasn't just any meat that I turned down. It was Heinkel's bone-in ham, the signature product of my family's pork packing plant. My grandpa Heinkel was then the president of Heinkel's packing company. And when I passed the ham on, he didn't look horrified at the time. He just looked confused and suggested that if I wasn't going to eat meat, maybe I should just take a small piece. As a grandchild of a grandpa who was a pork packer, I had been eating pork products since I could chew them. Sausage for breakfast, Braunschweiger for lunch, smoked sausage for dinner. We were a three-meat-a-day family. On his deathbed, my grandpa Heinkel made me promise two things, that I would eat meat again and that I wouldn't marry a Catholic. And in fact, my Catholic vegetarian husband doesn't eat meat either.
I'm Ann Howard of Alexandria, Virginia now, but my first Christmas sober in 1980, I was a resident of St. Simons Island, Georgia. I had realized about December 10th that I was perhaps alcoholic. After 4 days in detox, I was discharged. The 25th itself was a day to be endured. I had, because of my drinking, lost the support of family ties, friends, my job. Even the apartment in which I lived had been denuded, the furniture cleaned out through a moving sale that I had held to try to raise money. And so it was a pretty bare, pretty grim, very gray, I remember, day in which I counted the hours until the 26th. I read, I ate. By then, I had almost no resources, and I recall that Christmas dinner consisted of steamed broccoli, which at least was green. I walked the beach. I knew that I would not drink. I waited, mostly I waited for the hours to pass.
I am Morgan Silbaugh, and I am now retired, and I am an Episcopal priest, and my first Christmas was 1963, and unlike this year, we were not dealing with the demoralization of September 11th, rather we were dealing with the demoralization of November 22nd, when President Kennedy was killed. In 1963, I was all of 28 years old, very young, very enthusiastic, very eager. This was a tiny little mission church in a village in the middle of the snow belt, 18 miles northwest of Syracuse. But I'd been there since summer, and it felt like home. Basically, I told the Christmas story of God's coming into the world in love, but I used the song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, to help people see that our world needed divine intervention. And what I did was talk about the fact that the song reaffirms that we live in a world in which it is not all right to be different, that if you are different, you will be shut out. And when it talks about Rudolph not being allowed to play the games, not being treated with respect, being called names, that is not only every kid's nightmare, it's probably every person's nightmare. The message of the song is that love has to be earned either by conforming or by performing. And the message of Christmas is that God comes in love to us to live and die as one of us, not because we have earned it, but simply because his love is a gift. And that's why the two, I think, stand out in stark contrast one to another. Gift of love versus the real struggle that is almost a self-defeating struggle to earn love. If we do one more thing, if we lose a little more weight, if we have another face tuck, if we get another degree, if we get a better job, if we run the 100 in a new record, then someone will love us. And the message of Christmas is, relax, God does love you, you are loved, you don't need to earn love, it's a gift.
First Christmases, from Father Morgan Silbaugh, now of Ashland, Oregon, Ann Howard, marking 21 years sober, Jenny Spinner, still a vegetarian, of Storrs, Connecticut, Michael Alviar, now lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and Clea Simon just published a book, Fatherless Women, How We Change After We Lose Our Dads.